Welcome to Face to Face. Face to Face is an in-depth look at the life and career of a popular sports figure from a Christian perspective. Now, here's your host of Face to Face, Tom Rust.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome once again to Face to Face. Hope you're doing really well right here in the midst of summer. And here in the Midwest, we are certainly involved in baseball. Baseball, of course, probably being my favorite sport. And we have with us today a guy who is deeply entrenched in baseball. Now, the Cincinnati Reds, are having a pretty tough year. They've had tough years lately. They're losing close to 100 games, and they got a lot of names. And if you're not a Reds fan, you might not know a whole lot about these guys, although we did have Scooter Gennett on not long ago, and he's really having a tremendous year. But you got to go back to the Big Red Machine, 1974, 75, 76, to really remember what the Reds were like when they were at the top of their game. And a guy that just missed that, came along at the latter end of that Big Red Machine era, is Doug Flynn. And Doug is known primarily for who he got traded for. 1976, the Cincinnati Reds. I'm sorry, 1977, the Cincinnati Reds traded Doug Flynn, along with other guys, Steve Henderson, Dan Norman, Pat Zachary, traded them to the New York Mets for Tom Seaver. And, of course, Tom Seaver went on to have an outstanding career, not only with the Mets, but with the Cincinnati Reds, and was kind of a Hall of Famer. I actually had an opportunity to move to Cincinnati in the late 70s. I believe it was 1979 to 82. I lived in Cincinnati and got a chance to know one of their pitchers, a guy named Bill Bonham. Now, you got to be either a Reds fan or a Cubs fan to remember that. But Bill Bonham gave me tickets one day to a day game, and Tom Seaver was pitching. So I had the opportunity at one time, maybe more, I can't remember all the games I went to when I lived in Cincinnati, but I know at least one time I had a chance to see Tom Seaver pitch. And when we talked with Doug Flynn a couple of years ago, he had a chance to tell us a little bit about what it was like during that particular time. So Doug Flynn is our guest today. He's a part-timer on the Cincinnati Reds broadcast network. You don't hear him a lot, but he's there sometimes as a play-by-play analyst. And one of the things that you don't normally hear is his Christian testimony, a very strong Christian testimony. So we'll take a break, and when we come back, you'll hear what we have to add to when we had the interview with Doug Flynn, formerly of the Cincinnati Reds. We'll take a break and be back. You're listening to Face to Face. All right, thank you very much, and welcome back once again to Face to Face. We're glad to have you with us, and today we're going to talk baseball with a guy who had a pretty good career, 10 years in the major leagues, and his name is Doug Flynn. Doug, thanks for being a part of Face to Face.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Doug, you played during a very interesting time. You played 1975 to 1985. You played with the 1975-76 Reds, the Big Red Machine. What do you remember about those years?
Well, I grew up and, as you know, still live 80 miles south of Cincinnati. So growing up, I was a Reds fan. I remember going up to the ballpark as a kid at Crosley Field and watching the games. And I really wanted to be a basketball player. So I ended up going to UK and playing basketball. I was on the baseball team, but my skills were not quite what they were looking for. And then having an opportunity a couple of years later out of a tryout camp to sign with Cincinnati and going to spring training and walking in the locker room and seeing Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, Dave Concepcion, Tony Perez. It was very humbling, but also I was just in awe of those guys. And then to realize that I was going to be able to make the ball club and spend a couple of years watching potentially one of the best ball clubs ever. It was a lot of fun.
1975, I don't think you were expected to really make the club coming out of spring training.
That's an understatement right there. Well, they had a pretty much a set ball club. But, you know, there was a lot of pressure on that team. They were the best team to never win it. during the 70s. They got beat by Baltimore in 1970 in the World Series. In 72, they got beat by Oakland. 73, they got knocked out by the Mets. And then 75, there was still pressure because they had made some good trades, brought Joe Morgan over from Houston, got Jack Billingham, who was a very underrated pitcher. And the club was always there, but they really hadn't won the big one. And so they were really playing under a lot of pressure. And then I think that was quite evident when we went to the World Series in 75, a great World Series with Boston. But after we won that one, then the next year was pretty easy.
The 75 World Series, I believe that's the one where Carlton Fisk hit the famous home run.
Isn't that amazing?
But they won the World Series game, right?
I know. It's not like the World Series the Reds won. It's the one that Boston lost.
Right.
So it was a great World Series, and I had wonderful seats during the time. But I remember there was rain in Boston. It was cold, and we had two or three days where we didn't play at all. And, of course, the fans were crazy. And Boston's just got some fanatic fans, and they really support their ball club. But it was wonderful. And, of course, we got the big hit in Game 7, and Joe Morgan did. And once that happened, you could just tell that guys were so relaxed. And then in 1976, we basically just ran away with it.
You know, when you play alongside of superstars like Bench and Rose and Morgan, how did they treat you? Did they look at you as a rookie that
absolutely
just another guy on this team, or did they try to develop a relationship with you?
Well, during that time, they really tried to help because they knew that if I was going to be a utility player, whenever I got in a ball game, that I had to contribute. And when Joe Morgan set out or Concepcion set out, they didn't want there to be any drop-off. And so they would help me how to learn hitters, where to play certain guys, what to do. And I learned so much just watching and listening to them. And I would sit around. And, of course, when the big four, Perez, Morgan, Bench, and Rose talked, you didn't interrupt. And you would just listen. And, matter of fact, Dave Concepcion used to try to get into that conversation. And they said, you haven't earned your right yet. So I would sit and listen and try to learn as much as I could. But they really did try to help out because they wanted us to be a part of the ball club. And people said, did they sort of go off on their own? No, they never did that. They made sure by the way they dressed, by the way that they did everything that the organization asked them to do, that the rest of us would just fall in line. And so we were very fortunate in that respect.
And the guy holding all that together was Sparky Anderson. What was he like?
Sparky really was a veterans coach and didn't have a lot of young players on the team. That was kind of his MO for so many years. So when I made the club as a 24-year-old rookie, it was sort of odd, other than the fact that Dreesen was there and Ken Griffey Sr. was there, and we were all about the same age. They had got up to the big leagues a year earlier, but they were playing a whole lot more. So Sparky really said, all right, there's one set of rules for everybody on the team except for Bench, Rose, Morgan, and Perez. They had their own set of rules. And we understood that, and they had earned that right, so there really wasn't any problems. But Sparky had a great knack for knowing when to come in and take a pitcher out of a ball game. He utilized his staff very well, and Sparky was a great PR man, not only for baseball, but for the Cincinnati Reds.
Now, you went on to have a great career, particularly with the New York Mets. Mm-hmm. You won a Gold Glove in 1980, playing second base there. You were also a part of history in 1977 when you were become known as what has become known as the Friday Night Massacre. Mm-hmm. As the New York Mets really revamped their team basically in one night. You and a bunch of other guys were traded for Tom Seaver. Tell us about that moment when you found out you were going to the New York Mets.
Well, I was sitting on the bench and watching Pete Rose playing third. We were playing the Phillies, I believe, and he was talking to their dugout, which was unlike Pete. He was very animated, and there wasn't much room between third base and the dugout in Riverfront Stadium. And when the inning was over, he came in, sat down beside me, and patted me on the leg. And I said, I'm gone, Arnold. And he said, yeah. And I said, where am I going? He said, you're going to New York. They had heard it on the radio, and then so they were sending word out to Pete because we didn't know yet. And I said, which team in New York? He said, you're going to the Mets. I said, who for? He said, Tom Seaver. And I said, straight up. And he said, not hardly. So it was me, Danny Norman, Steve Henderson, and Pat Zachary. And, Pete looked at me. He said, Doug, it's a good opportunity for you. They had Buddy Harrelson. And Felix Mion were playing. Both of them were getting a little bit older. So he said, this is a great opportunity for you to get a chance to play. And I think one of the true blessings was getting an opportunity to play for Joe Torre. Joe was a player coach the first year, and then he took over as manager. And if you can't play for Joe, you can't play for anybody.
Yeah, tell us about Joe Torre. He's become one of the most storied managers in baseball. Quite honestly, the years that you were with the Mets, not great years. Lost almost 100 games there.
We were very bad.
Yeah. And then he went on to a great career with the Yankees, with the Dodgers. What's the secret with Joe Torre?
Well, they were revamping the ball club, and there was a lot of moves that Joe wanted to make that they just wouldn't let him make. They were getting ready to have some new ownership. Mr. Doubleday and Fred Wilpon, Mr. Wilpon, were taking over the ball club. They brought in Frank Cashin as a general manager, and these were all really good people, and they were ready to develop a good ball club. Mr. Grant was on his way out. As Tom Seaver would tell anybody now, I was going to somebody. And so it was just the Reds that happened to be the ones that picked him up, and then we were the guys that were taking all the some of the letters I got were not very complimentary, as you can imagine, going to New York. But Joe was a player. He never forgot that, so he knew how to handle players. He was so confident in his own abilities and the fact that, you know, he could take or leave baseball. And so he didn't have anybody putting pressure on him from the front office. The only problem was in New York in those lean years, they wouldn't let Joe go out and get the players because he would talk about it all the time. You know, we got a chance to get so-and-so, so-and-so, and they wouldn't do that. And so we struggled because we had a lot of young players who had never been starters. They threw us in the mix, and they just said, all right, go get them. And it was tough on Joe, and it wasn't real easy on us, but we were having some fun, even though we were losing.
Doug Flynn is our guest, the former player with the New York Mets. Doug, tell us a little bit about what it was like playing in Shea Stadium. Shea, not a great reputation as a stadium. It came down this year for the new Citi Field. And what was it like going from Cincinnati to New York?
It was culture shock for me, growing up in the Midwest and now having an opportunity to go up to New York. And I'd heard a lot of bad things about it. And, of course, playing there as a visiting player, you hear a lot of stuff, too. But if you're a professional, that's the place you want to play. And I found out early, if you keep your mouth shut and play hard, the fans really don't get on you too much. And I've got some buddies today that continually read the blogs about people saying stuff. And I said, you know, most of the people are saying that weren't even born when I was playing. So all they do is read a statistic, and they really don't have any idea. The fans were more than fair with me. And I knew that if I made a mistake, just say I made a mistake. If I wasn't playing well, then you just say that, and they really were very loyal, and I got a chance to see that once again when they closed Shea Stadium. I was up there for the last ball game in Shea. Took me some dirt from the infield, and the groundskeeper's last name happened to be Flynn as well. And Pete Flynn was there, and matter of fact, when I won a Gold Glove in 80, I bought all the ground crew watches, and some of them still have them. Can you
really
believe that? And I want to find out what kind of watch that is, because evidently it was a better watch than I thought. But, you know, playing at Shea, it was different. But playing in New York is pretty special, because I don't care if you play good or bad, people all over the world are going to know about it. And that's what you want as a professional.
And so I
loved it.
Doug Flynn, as we said, is our guest. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we're going to find out more about Doug. So don't go away. You are listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. Our guest is Doug Flynn, who played for the Cincinnati Reds during the great years there, went to play with the New York Mets, and played with some other teams too, played a little bit with Montreal, Texas Rangers, I think finished up with Detroit, and closed out his career in 1985, at least his playing career. Let's go back to your time in New York. When you were in New York, I know you got married, and I know life changed for you as an individual there. What was it like being in the spotlight constantly and having a new wife and trying to get a family established?
Well, I got married when I went to, after the 81 strike year, I was at home in wintertime, and I just signed a 5-year contract the year before, so I thought I was set for playing in New York for the rest of my career. I had met a young girl, it was a strike year, so we had been seeing each other, and we decided that we were going to get married. So we got married. We were going to get married in the spring, right before we started spring training of 1982. Well, I get a phone call, says you've been traded to Texas. And what happened, Frank Cashin came over to the New York Mets, and he got rid of Joe Torre, John Lee Mazzilli, and myself. And so he was basically going to take anybody who had anything to do with the previous 4 years, get rid of us, and then start rebuilding again. And they ended up building that into a World Series team in 1986. So Mr. Cashin knew a lot about baseball. But I couldn't understand why I was going to Texas, and I was only there 4 months. But I had got married prior to going to the spring training with the Texas Rangers. And it was different because I was 30, almost 31 years of age. I was pretty well set in my ways. I had prayed for a good Christian woman, and little did I know, she'd been praying for a good Christian man, and we both fooled each other because at that time, both of us really didn't know exactly where we were in our relationship with Christ. And I ended up going to spring training. Don Zimmer was the manager. Bump Wills was there, who was, I'd known his dad for a long time, and then Bump was a good player. And so there was a lot of transition going on with the Texas Rangers as well. They were bringing in a lot of new folks. They had new managers, new players, new this, new that. And it was tough for me, and it had a lousy – I didn't play well at all. I was only there 4 months, and then I get traded to Montreal. And in the meantime, I just got married, and I'm going home to my wife and having to listen to, well, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Before, I just went home to my dog, and we'd sit there and look at each other, and, you know, we'd be over it in a little while and then be ready for the next day. Now I'm having to answer questions, and so we really struggled in our relationship the first year. Matter of fact, I think the over and under was probably about a year and a half for people who had seen us.
Yeah.
Because I was not handling it very well at all.
Now, she was very instrumental, though, in you at least taking the next step in your Christian life. And I understand you went to a pro athletes outreach conference, and that changed your life.
It did. I'd been brought up in a Christian home, and I was an embarrassment as a Christian for years because I could do it for one day, and then for 6 days I was just out in the field. And I get home one day, my wife says, we're going to the PAO conference. I'd heard about it from years through Baseball Chapel. And I said, and why are we going there? She said, because I've already sent the money in, and if our relationship's going to last, then we're going to have to go. So I didn't want to go. You know, in the off season, the private time for a ball player in the off season is pretty special, as you know. And when we come home, you just want to get away from all of that. You don't want to be around. You want some time where you can have to yourself. And a lot of guys do that through fishing or hunting or whatever. And so now I was going to come home. The season was over in the 1st of October, and now the 1st of November, we were going to go to this conference, and I was going to be around a bunch of judgmental people, I thought. And I knew, and the whole time, I know that God was just convicting me of the way that I'd been living my life. So we go to this conference, and it wasn't judgmental at all. Norm and Bobby Evans were running PAO, and they were such wonderful folks. They're just big, loving. All they did is loved on you, and there were people there. I walked the first day we walked into Tampa, Florida, and there was a guy named Dave Swanson who was a Baseball Chapel leader in New York, and Dave looked at me, and he started crying, and I said, Dave, I just got here. What are you crying for? He said, because I have prayed for you every single day for 9 years to get you to this conference, and that was very humbling to me, and it was an eye-opener. But when we got there, we realized there was a lot of guys that were struggling with some of the same issues I was, and we had excellent teachers, and the teachers would teach you about Christian principles to your finances and your relationships and how to handle on the road and, you know, handling teammates and coaches. And we were all there. We were all right out of baseball and talking about the same things. And so I realized that, you know, after that first year, that what was missing in my life, even though I was a Christian and I had accepted Christ, that I really didn't have a personal relationship with Christ. And boy, through this conference, that was 1984, and my wife and I have been going every year since. We've been board members of PAO, and it's wonderful. It's a great tool, and there's so many good ministries. PAO, Unlimited Potential with Tom Roy, and Baseball Chapel with Vince Nas. They all really help each other in that you go to the conference and you learn how to witness, and you learn biblical principles, and then UPI takes you on a trip someplace where you get a chance to put it in place, and then during the baseball season, Baseball Chapel's right there to give you some comfort.
Baseball's really covered. There's no doubt about that. Yep. After you became a Christian in 1984, did you see an immediate change in your relationship, your life? You said your marriage sort of got turned around a little bit. And
absolutely.
It didn't last a whole long baseball. I think you played maybe one more year as a player.
I know.
That was about it.
85 was my last year. I went to Montreal, then I ended up getting released. I was sitting at home, and Sparky Anderson called and said, you want to finish the season with the Tigers? And I said, yeah. He said, are you hurt? And I said, no, sir. He said, well, the Expo said you were hurt. And I said, Well, that's not true. And so I went up to Detroit. They were playing the Yankees, matter of fact. Now, I'd only had 6 at-bats through June, so I really wasn't playing a lot. I wasn't playing at all. So Sparky said, go out and take some ground balls. I went out to shortstop with Alan Trammell, took some ground balls, and Sparky called me in. He said, go upstairs and sign a contract. So I went up and signed, and the next day was Saturday. They had game of the week with the Yankees. Ron Guidry was pitching. Sparky says, you're playing second base. I went, well, it's a good way to break you in. And so, you know, I loved Sparky for that. You know, he's been a dear friend, then collusion came into the game, and when the collusion got there, they knocked the rosters down in 86, and they started getting rid of a lot of veteran players like me and not signing some free agents, and so my career was basically over. But, you know, for signing out of a tryout camp and getting 11 years in the big leagues is just – it's remarkable. When I look back at how God has blessed that, it was amazing. But, yeah, the career was over. And, you know, each year we continually have to go to that conference. I want to go and I want to learn how to be a better husband. I want to learn how to be a better coworker. I want to learn how to be a better friend. And what I've learned is that the closer I grow in my relationship to Christ, and the closer all of those other relationships are. And that's what I needed to find out. I needed to not be a phony, and there for so many years I was, and a lot of things I'm not real proud of, but boy, thank goodness that 2,000 years ago when Christ laid it all on the cross for us, you know, all of that stuff has been forgiven. And people say, well, so are you one of those religious fanatical Christians? I hope so. I'm not very religious. I don't think I'm a religious person, but yes, I want to be a fanatical Christian.
Doug, our time is up. Let's close this way. Do you have a favorite verse that you would like to leave with our listeners?
Well, Romans 8:28 sort of been my life verse. And I know when I was a young Christian, they were asking about, you know, they said, Doug, you need to start learning how to quote the Bible, and you need to have a life verse. And, you know, when I look at how things have worked, I don't understand it all, but I know that God has had a hand in every single thing that's happened in my life. And I know that as I grow closer with my relation with Him, then I know that things are not a coincidence now. They work for a reason. And I know that all things work good to those that love the Lord and are called according to His purpose. And I know that I've been called, and I know I've been given a platform. And I know that I have to use this platform to go out and to share this with other folks. And that's what I want to do. I want people to see up there and use the platform of a baseball player, but I don't want to be known as that. I want people to say, there goes Doug Flynn. He's a man of God. And I want to try to get to that 24/7. I'm not there yet, Tom. I'm trying to get there. But 24/7 is what I want to be. And I know I got work to do. But thank goodness I'm not what I was, and I'm not what I'm going to be. But, boy, God's right there right now doing a great thing in my life.
Doug, thanks for being with us. God bless you and your ministry, and thanks for being a part of Face to Face.
And you too. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Doug Flynn, former major leaguer. We will take a break and be back. You're listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. Hope you enjoyed our time with Doug Flynn. I always enjoy talking baseball, so it was a lot of fun when we sat down with Doug down in Lexington, I believe. We had a chance to talk to him down there, and it's always fun to talk to guys like that about baseball because they always have such great stories, and I always enjoy them. Hey, if you want to know more about Face to Face, take a look at our website. Our website is at facetofaceradio.com. Normally about this time, we have a golf tournament. Now, this year, for a number of reasons, we did not do a golf tournament, but there's still a donation page. If you would like to give to Face to Face, you can certainly do that, and we hope maybe you'll check that out. Maybe give a donation to help keep this ministry going. Again, that's on our website at facetofaceradio.com. Hope you enjoyed our time with Doug Flynn today, and to wrap it up, we'd like to take you to a scripture verse. And this is kind of an interesting scripture verse dealing with the Holy Spirit. And it's from John chapter 3, verse 8. And it says this, "The wind blows wherever it pleases. You hear its sound, but you can't tell where it comes from or where it's going. So it is with everyone born of the Spirit." And, of course, one of the things that we really truly believe is that when you're born, you get the Holy Spirit when you accept Jesus Christ into your life. And if you're struggling right now, or if you're just trying to find some purpose and want to know what life's all about, we ask you, even right now, if you've never accepted Jesus Christ into your life,
Why not do that today in the same way that Doug Flynn has done? Just ask Jesus Christ to come in, and he will come in, and the Holy Spirit will fill your life. That's about it for us. We look forward to having you back next week. We'll have another Christian athlete. Till then, this is Tom Russ saying, remember this, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, be a good sport. Bye.
You've been listening to Face to Face with Tom Russ. For a free copy of today's program or for more information, please write to Face to Face Ministries, P.O. Box 125, Columbus, Indiana, 47202. You can also find us on the web at facetofaceradio.com. Join us again next week as Tom Rust goes face to face.